Number 5A.
So we take the first subject on mind, and in the epitome book that you have before you, we have there the epitome for the whole tone of mind. Namely, it is shown here that the effects of animal magnetism are due to the influence of the imagination, to illusion. Can you recognize in here the tone of mind in that epitome, that it has all to do with the question of the influence? Is the influence an influence of imagination? Is it an influence of illusion? Both imagination, illusions are the counterfeit of mind, the light of mind. So I think one has not much difficulty in recognizing the tone of mind in here. She elaborates that tone of mind through the seven subtones, and we read in the textbook together the text, and we shouldn't forget actually that I don't try to explain animal magnetism now, but that I put my accent, that the accent is much more on the subject of text interpretation, to know how to read a text, how to structure a text according to the system of reference that we have. So we are not so much listening to the terms and the words, but we are listening to the subject. That's always difficult for a student because he has never been trained in his schooling to think in subjects. He's always thinking in terms of words and sentences. So here we have mesmerism or animal magnetism was first brought into notice by Mesmer in Germany in 1775. Now, this is one mistake that Mrs. Eddy made in the textbook. Actually, it was in Austria and not in Germany. He was living in 1775 as a medical doctor in Vienna, and it was during his practice that he began to become interested in first in magnets and then afterwards in magnetism, which he called animal magnetism. Mesmer was born in Germany, but he introduced actually animal magnetism in Austria, in Vienna. According to the American Encyclopedia, he regarded his so-called force. So we hear at once a tone that animal magnetism has to do with a force, and she right now here says a so-called force. That's she would never have said that in the first edition, which he said could be exerted by one living organism over another. So from one body to another body, from the practitioner to the patient, that there is a so-called force that acts between those two organic bodies, and that is as a means of alleviating disease. So we have a statement here. What is animal magnetism? Animal magnetism is a so-called force. What kind of force? A force for alleviating disease. So we have a tone of mind here, mind as mind. Then she goes on and defines it further. As tone of spirit comes in, you will notice that there exists a mutual influence between the celestial bodies, the earth, and animated things. This was his first discovery, that especially the moon had an influence on the patients, and so he was strengthened in that belief that there must be a animal magnetic fluid between the heavenly bodies and animated things. Animal bodies are susceptible to the influence of this agent, disseminating itself through the substance of the nerves. So we have another small tone in it. We still have mind as a mutual influence, but that mind needs the substance of nerves. So it must be substantialized through matter in order to be effective. That's a subtone of spirit. Then we come to a subtone of soul by further defining animal magnetism. In 1784, the French government ordered the medical faculty of Paris to investigate Mesmer's theory and to report upon it. Under this order, a commission was appointed, and Benjamin Franklin was one of the commissioners. This commission reported to the government as follows. Actually, you know that committees never report the truth. That is true today as at that time. They only report what suits their purpose, not what is the truth. So they had to run down Mesmer, therefore they had to find out that Mesmer was wrong. No matter how right he was or wrong he was, they had to find out that he was wrong. There was too much envy among the medical people in Paris who didn't like the terrific success that Mesmer had in Paris. He had a terrific big clinic where he gathered every day 200 patients that came from every country, from England, from Belgium, from Holland, from Germany, from Austria, from Russia, all over the world. People would come, and they couldn't fly at that time nor take the train at that time. It was a really hard journey to go there. So one can see that he was a very well-known figure in Paris and a lot of jealousy in the medical faculty. So they had to find reasons to run him down. It's interesting when one reads those reports, there were many, many commissions in the long run that were investigating really animal magnetism, and whenever they did, if they could have a chance to take somebody who was a bad student of Mesmer, they would take him in order to make experiments. Not the best. They didn't. So we have to be very careful about what these people said. In regard to the existence and utility of animal magnetism, we have come to the unanimous conclusion that there is no proof of the existence of an animal magnetic fluid, that's all right, that the violent effects, see, the patient always showed violent effects first. They always went through a so-called crisis. So he treated them with his animal magnetic method until the patient came into a crisis, into a chemicalization, and then they were brought into a parlor where there was nice music and a little bit of light in it, very mystical, where they had nice couches to lay down and to rest themselves until the crisis was over, and then usually the situation, the symptoms changed. So they had violent effects, crisis, just as Mrs. Eddy would tell us that under Christian Science treatment, we notice very often that the patient gets worse, that he gets a state of chemicalization, and she too says that that is a good sign. It's a sign that evil tries to revolt again but cannot, and then for abates. So that the violent effects which are observed in the public practice of magnetism are due to manipulations or to the excitement of the imagination and impressions made upon the senses. So you get the sense of the counterfeit of soul in it, that it has actually to do with a lot of exciting the senses and the imagination, and that there is one more fact to be recorded in the history of the errors of the human mind, and an important experiment upon the power of imagination. So you have constantly the tone of mind, of imagination, of force, but now you can see that they just put it, so to say, swept it under the carpet and said, this is just the power of imagination. But on that very power of imagination, if you may call it, afterwards, whole faculty of psychology, psychiatry, of psychosomatic medicine, of parapsychic phenomena is built today. Today we have in every university a faculty, professors and students galore that study that. But at that time, they just could not see that it has to do with a psychological factor. Really didn't go deep enough in that examination. We come to another examination and we get the tone of principle in it. In 1837, that was long after Mesmer's death. Mesmer died 1815 in Germany. So long afterwards again, a committee of 9 persons was appointed, among whom were Roux, Bouillard and Glocke, which tested during several sessions the phenomena exhibited by a reputed clairvoyant. And the report says that it was a very poor clairvoyant. They took a very poor one. I mean poor in his abilities. Yeah. And their report again stated the results as follows. The facts which had been promised by Monsieur Bernard the magnetizer as conclusive and as adapted to throw light on physiological and therapeutical questions, you see, they still considered it as a physiological question, not as a psychological question. That was unknown at that time. We can see how things start with an error, is therefore treated in a false way, until finally then, after another 100 years after Mesmer, there came those first psychologists, Janet and Charcot in France, Libio in France, and then further the Viennese school with Freud and so on. So, gosh, I read again from 13 the facts which had been promised by Monsieur Bernard, the magnetizer, as conclusive and as adapted to throw light on physiological and therapeutical questions are certainly not conclusive in favor of the doctrine of animal magnetism and have nothing in common with either physiology or therapeutics. So they investigated it in the way of physiology, because that's the only thing they knew at that time. They didn't know anything about psychology. And so, naturally, they couldn't find a real answer to it. This report was adopted by the Royal Academy of the Medicine in Paris. And then we know that after that, mesmerism started really to have a real go. But it changed naturally from a magnetic fluid to a psychological agent. That was what Mesmer never saw. That was his fate. That he had discovered something terrific big and couldn't explain it, or explained it wrongly. But the phenomena was there. So at the tone of principle, one could see that at that time it couldn't stand scientific investigation. We come now to Mrs. Eddy, what she thinks about it. So up to this point, it was constantly saying or telling something about the history, very short. On that whole history until the middle of the 19th century, you can write a very thick volume about it. It's most interesting, really, how that phenomena was drawing the attention all over Europe. And everybody was interested in it. They say that there was hardly any meeting of the academical people without that Mesmer was mentioned and was discussed. So I just want to rehabilitate Mesmer for the Christian scientists. Then we have a tone of life coming in. Namely, now comes Mrs. Eddy's attitude. The author's own observation. You see, you have again a tone of mind, of observing, of investigating what? It was always investigating an influence that could not be really explained. But the author's own observations of the workings of animal magnetism convince her that it is not a remedial agent. So she first takes into consideration the effect of animal magnetism and says, it is not really a remedial agent, though mesmer could remedy, and mesmerists could remedy people. But naturally, she had a higher level of judging something as real or unreal, because her level of judging something was always the spiritual level, always going out from the divine level. Is an effect something that is divinely right, not is something humanly right or physically right, like changing of symptoms. So that it is not a remedial agent, and that its effect upon those who practice it and upon their subject, therefore practitioner and patient, who do not resist it, lead to moral and to physical death. So you have a sense of life coming in, that it is actually not an agent that leads to life, that leads forward, spiritually forward, but that it's something that is degrading men and deteriorating men. It leads to moral and physical death. Then she takes up another aspect on animal magnetism. If animal magnetism seems to alleviate or to cure disease, you see, it seemed so, because Quimby was well known in this country, and his healing practice was well valued in this country. So where in other countries the magnetizers and the hypnotizers and their healing effects, they were well appreciated afterwards, this appearance is deceptive. Now comes the point of having a standard according to which to measure if something is true or wrong, if it's reality or if it's in the realm of unreality. And she said, it's really deceptive, since error cannot remove the effects of error. That's a very short statement, bringing down the whole question to just the core of it, and says, well, something that starts out with the human mind is erroneous, and therefore the effect must also be erroneous. Can you see what she feels? If something does not start out with God, divine mind, then it doesn't really be something that happens in the realm of reality. Therefore, it's not true. So everything that is not going out from the divine mind, like that which goes out from imagination, from illusions, must be error. But then she makes that remark, discomfort under error is preferable to comfort. Well, we don't like that. If we are in a situation where we feel we are sick and diseased, and we like to have a healing, well, then we like to take that which gives us the quickest way to a comfort. What does heal quicker? Our consciousness, or medicine, or magic, or animal magnetism, or hypnotism, or any other kind of mental treatment, or medicine? And so she says, be careful. Discomfort under error is preferable to comfort under error. So that's what I said yesterday. We cannot blame Christian Scientists if they try very hard to heal themselves through Christian Science, through spiritual means, even if perhaps there would be a possibility to get rid of it quickly through medicine, which in many cases is possible, like pain and things like that. So she said, this does not solve anything. If the aim is to get a comfort as quickly as possible in the body, that is not a measurement, that is not the standard according to which we should really act. In no instance is the effect of animal magnetism, recently called hypnotism, animal magnetism developed then afterwards in the middle of the last century into hypnotism in England, where it was discovered. Recently called hypnotism, in no instance is the effect of animal magnetism, recently called hypnotism, other than the effect of illusion. Again, she brings it down back to illusion, just as in Paris 100 years before, they said, well, it's only power of imagination that is at work and not a animal magnetic fluid. Any seeming benefit derived from it is proportional to one's faith in esoteric magic. And this ends the whole tone with a tone of a finalizing statement, so that the seeming benefit derived from it, there we could see that all those mesmerists, and afterwards the hypnotists, and afterwards the psychologists, then the magnetizers and so on, they all had a healing effect. They had quite a good percentage of success in healing. And she said, but that benefit, that success is only a seeming one. Why is it a seeming one? Because it is based on one's faith in esoteric magic, because it's based on mortal mind, on the human mind. Whatever is based on the human mind, no matter if it's a healing process, no matter if it is a dogma that is based on human mind, no matter if it is a science based on human mind, it cannot be true. The only thing that is true is God, truth, that only can manifest itself through the divine mind. This is the enormous challenge for today and for people, because we like to take those remedies which gives us the quickest result, whereas we are living here on earth in an experimental stage, so to say, to work out something more than changing symptoms on the body. We are working out our life mission, our life work that has no beginning, no end, and therefore every effort we put into the development and evolution of a spiritual life work is only true and is therefore of real benefit and not of seeming benefit. So we learn to know here that something that is quite strong, that it says that don't be fooled by changing symptoms. What we are engaged in is really to see that we build our life on the basis of the divine mind, of the power of the divine mind, of the action of divine mind, on the healing power of the divine mind, on the guidance of the divine mind, on the intelligence of the divine mind, or else we will have no mind science, no divine mind healing. All right. Now, I think this was a very easy text to follow. We just run quickly through it. We take now the text of the Epitome book and just see how she builds up that subject through the seven subtones, so that we have a better overall view. So we keep in mind the main tone, namely, they have their mind that the effects of animal magnetism are due to the influence of the imagination, to illusion, to esoteric magic. So this we keep as our main subject in view, that it turns all around the counterfeit of the divine mind. And she explains how that counterfeit of the divine mind has seven counterfeits of the seven synonymous term, in order that we get an overall and overall view on it. So mind as mind says what? Animal magnetism is regarded as a so-called healing force. It's a so-called force. You can hear here mind, force, healing force, which can be exerted by one living organism on another, and that naturally for the purpose of alleviating disease. So it is stated first as a force. Then, in spirit, the influence of this force. Now we go further and ask something about this force. It's believed to disseminate itself through the substance of the nerves. It needs a body, it needs matter in order to transfer itself. That's why at the beginning, even the students of Mrs. Eddy would manipulate the patients. they would take the patient and then first wash their hair and then afterwards massage the skull of the head while they were introducing truth into the patient's mind. And then finally she could see that this is not good, and then she forbid that method. She herself never used it. So again, animal magnetism has that the claim that you need for mind, which is insubstantial, something very material, substantial, to transfer itself. That's why it is laying hands, you say laying off hands, laying on hands, you see, so that there is a material channel there for mind to flow through. Then as soul, we go further about this substance, namely, as there is no proof of the existence of an animal magnetic fluid, the mesmerized that fluid theory, that there is something substantial, material substantial there, though it cannot be seen, it's so finely dispersed that we can't see it with our eyes, that the violent effects of animal magnetism are due to the excitement of the imagination. You can hear the counterfeit tone of soul, the excitement of imagination, and the impression made upon the senses. So then, therefore, we also need the senses to work with that animal magnetism, magnetic fluid. Then comes principle. Now, the explanation of this phenomena, always when we come to principle, it explains mind, spirit, soul, and we have another subtone.